Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The United States Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit is now open according to law. God save the United States and this honorable court.
Good morning. Welcome to the 11th Circuit. Today we have four cases on for oral argument. I think you're all familiar with our timing system, but just as a reminder, please do try to stick to the time limits. Obviously, if any of us ask questions that take you over the time limits, please answer those questions. We're asking them because we want to know the answers. But other than that, please do stick to the time limits. All right, we will begin today with United States of America versus Sir Roderick McCobb. And we'll hear first from Ms. Howard. I'm sorry, from Ms. Gershow. Nope, Ms. Howard. Apologies.
That's correct. Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Your Honors. And may it please the court, Catherine Howard on behalf of Sir Roderick McCobb. There are two major reasons why the government failed to prove that Mr. McCobb's Florida cocaine convictions are serious drug offenses. First, the statutory language shows that the Florida definition of cocaine is broader than the federal definition. And second, the government's argument to the contrary, made for the first time on appeal, conflicts with the statutory language and relies on a factual premise that has no basis in the record. Starting, as we must, with the statutory language, Florida controls any stereoisomer of cocaine, while the federal government controls only its optical and geometric isomers. The government acknowledges this plain statutory mismatch, but argues with no support that it is a distinction without a difference. But the statutory language tells us otherwise and establishes that the Florida definition is overbroad. And I have two reasons that I would like to explain to your honors as to why. First, elsewhere in section 893.03, Florida controls optical isomers and geometric isomers of other substances. So the Florida legislature knew how to limit a substance to its optical isomer and or geometric isomer if that's what it wanted to do. It did not do so for cocaine, demonstrating that the term stereoisomer in relation to cocaine must be broader than simply optical or geometric isomers. The De La Torre case that we cited in our briefs is instructive on this point. There, the Seventh Circuit performed the same textual analysis on the Indiana Controlled Substances Schedule to determine that the statutory mismatch between the state and federal definitions of methamphetamine rendered the state definition overbroad. The same result is warranted here. Thus, as in De La Torre, this court can rule for Mr. McCobb based on the plain statutory language alone and the purposeful exclusion of the terms optical and geometric isomer from the cocaine definition.
Ms. Howard, why aren't we bound by United States versus Smith, the 2014 case, which stated that a violation of this section of the Florida statutes is a serious drug offense? And in particular, I want to know why this isn't simply an overlooked argument, which we've said doesn't prevent us from applying our prior panel precedent rule.
Yes, Your Honor. This is not an overlooked argument of Smith because the issue in Smith is entirely distinct. Smith's issue, which we know because the opinion sets it out in the very first sentence, is whether the serious drug offense definition includes state offenses without an element of mens rea as to the illicit nature of the substance. So that is the issue that Smith was confronted with, the only issue that Smith decided. And Smith's holding is that no, the definition does not require that state offenses have an element of mens rea. Nothing that this court decides in this case will conflict with that holding in any way, because the issue here is not an overlooked argument, but it's a distinct issue regarding a different component of the serious drug offense definition, the component that requires that there be a controlled substance as defined in 21 USC section 802. Smith simply does not speak to that component or to that requirement of the serious drug offense definition. And we know that here, that requirement is not met. For the reason that I was just explaining about the purposeful exclusion of the terms optical and geometric, but also because the unrebutted expert report also shows that the Florida's definition is overbroad on its face. Because the statutes do not define the terms optical isomer, geometric isomer, or stereoisomer we have to look to the scientific meaning of the terms. And the scientific meaning of the terms, as the report establishes, is that the meaning of stereoisomer includes at least one category of isomers, mesoisomers, that are not optical or geometric.
Counsel, I couldn't find in your report where your expert said that there was a mesoisomer of cocaine, or that every chemical substance has mesoisomers. Am I overlooking something in that report?
No, Your Honor, that's correct, Your Honor. But the report isn't opining about the substance of cocaine specifically. What the report is doing is simply defining the terms that already appear in the statute.
I understand that, but if a term appears in the statute and there is no mesoisomer of cocaine, then we don't have a problem.
I think, Your Honor, if the government had put on proof that there is no mesoisomer of cocaine.
I thought about that, but my tentative conclusion is the burden's on you, not on the government.
Your Honor, I agree that the burden is on us to show a realistic probability that the Florida statute captures conduct that the federal government does not. And the way that we have met that burden is by pointing to the plain statutory language. And the statutory language shows that the statute covers any stereoisomer of cocaine. And we know
you would agree with me that if it was stipulated that cocaine didn't have a mesoisomer, you would lose, right?
I would agree that that would be a much different position
I know it's different. That's why I'm asking. But you would lose.
I think we would likely lose.
In this case, unless you establish that cocaine has a mesoisomer.
Your Honor, I don't think that we need to establish that cocaine has a mesoisomer. We need to establish that the statutory language is plain, that the term that the language of the definition of cocaine includes more than simply optical isomers and geometric isomers. And we've
I don't think the language establishes that. Where in the statute does it say this includes mesoisomers, or this includes something other than the other two?
Your Honor, the couple of points. First, that the Florida legislature uses the terms optical isomers and geometric isomers elsewhere in the statute. So if it wanted to limit cocaine to simply optical isomers and mesoisomers, it knew how to do so. The fact that it did not tells us that the statutory language itself is indicating that stereoisomers include something more than optical and geometric.
It tells us that other substances they wanted to outlaw had mesoisomers, but we don't know that cocaine did.
I think even putting aside the mesoisomer specifically, Your Honor, it tells us that the term stereoisomers is intended to capture more than simply optical and geometric isomers, and that renders it broader than the federal definition, regardless of whether
it's meant to capture that for substances that have more, but we don't know that cocaine is one. Here's my question. It's a simple thing for this expert to say, and oh, by the way, cocaine has a mesoisomer, but she didn't do that.
She didn't, Your Honor, because she was defining the terms that were already in the statute. And I would also point this court to every other circuit case, which we cited in our briefs, where the statutory language, as here, is overbroad. And the government raised an argument that actually, despite this overbreadth, the way that it is overbroad is impossible. And no circuit has simply taken the government's word for it, and no circuit has put the burden on the defendant to disprove this negative. Instead, it has been the burden on the government to show that this court should ignore the statutory language because there is a possibility problem. It's the burden on the government at that point because the statutory language has already made it clear and satisfied the defendant's burden. And so that is what the other circuit courts have done. And I think I suggest that is what this court should do here because there is no-
Let me ask you a question about if we were to agree with you, and we were to vacate and remand. On remand, do you think that the government would be able to put on proof or make this argument?
You know, I can't speak to what the government could do, Your Honor. And obviously, we would welcome the opportunity to litigate this on remand. I would note that the government has never asked for the opportunity to make this argument on remand, has never suggested it would put on this proof. So I can't speculate as to whether it would. I would suggest that the most equitable outcome, although obviously any is within this court's discretion, is to remand for resentencing without the ACCA enhancement and allow the government to make any argument and any scientific proof on this issue in a future case, which is what—
So you're not arguing that the government has waived this in the district court, or are you? Since
I think that the government clearly failed to respond. It waived this opportunity. It had one shot to prove that Mr. McCobb is subject to the ACCA enhancement, and it failed to do so. And so I think the most equitable outcome would be to remand for resentencing without the enhancement and let the government make its argument, should it so choose, and present its proof, if it has any, in a future case, like in Lorenzo II in the Ninth Circuit and like in De La Torre in the Seventh Circuit.
Thank you, counsel. We'll hear now from Ms. Gershow.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court, Holly Gershow on behalf of the United States. Let me start with Smith. Smith forecloses this argument, and here's why. The facts in Smith and the argument in Smith are the same. The fact in Smith is that his sentence was enhanced based on an 893.13 violation for sale of cocaine. The argument that he made is that that offense did not qualify as a serious drug offense. The fact in this case is that the defendant has convictions for sale of cocaine in violation of 893.13, and he is arguing that his conviction, offense does not categorically qualify as a serious drug offense.
Can I ask you a question about that, counsel? Here's the thing. When we look at Shuler tells us that there are basically two different ways that there can be a definition for an offense. One is by describing conduct, and the other is actually definitional. It's got components. And it seems to me, like when we're looking at the definition of serious drug offense, that it's sort of a hybrid, right? I mean, we already know that the part that talks about involving manufacturing, distributing, or possessing, blah, 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 is an example of conduct. But then it says a controlled substance as defined in section 102 of the Controlled Substances Act. Why isn't that part the definitional component part that is spoken of in Shuler? And if it is, then how does Smith, it seems like Smith does not address that. It's not an overlooked argument because it was never addressed at that point. It wasn't relevant to the mens rea aspect. And besides that, Shuler came out afterwards. So let me turn it over to you to see if you can address that for me, please.
Two points is, one, Xavier Smith came out after Shuler and basically said nothing about Shuler changed the analysis in Smith, Travis Smith, the 2014 Smith. Second, the categorical approach requires that every part of the Florida statute falls within the scope of the definition of a serious drug offense. And so that would include that cocaine is a controlled substance under the ACCA. So when the court in the first Smith and in the second Smith said this offense is a serious drug offense, it had to have found that every part of the Florida statute matched every part of the federal definition of a serious drug offense. So that's why this is just another argument about why it doesn't categorically qualify. So it is an overlooked argument. But even
if you characterize the argument, you're loading the question, the answer into the question. The question, if you will, is whether it's an argument or an issue. If a defendant attacked a statute on grounds of, let's say, Sixth Amendment, violates the Sixth Amendment, and the court, in the course of adjudicating that, rejected that and said, this statute is constitutional, period. And then another defendant in a different case comes in and says, this violates the due process clause. We wouldn't say the prior panel precedent rule forecloses that because we said in the first case, the statute constitutional, would we?
No, but Your Honor, in this case, we're talking about whether the statute categorically qualifies as a serious drug offense.
No, we're talking about whether it fails to categorically qualify as a serious drug offense for a reason that's different from the first case reason.
Right, but that wouldn't that just be an overlooked argument as to why it didn't categorically qualify as a serious drug?
I think it would be an overlooked issue. It sort of depends on the purpose of the prior panel precedent rule. And the purpose is to add stability, predictability, and to repeat, for want of a better term, a Groundhog Day kind of scenario on federal appellate review and district court determinations. And you do that by addressing each issue or question as it comes up, as opposed to making broad statements that this statute's constitutional or this statute, there's no problem with this statute relating to counting the serious drug offenses.
But I think this, if the court would allow the macabre to make this argument, it would open up the court to relitigating over and over again issues about why the statute doesn't categorically qualify and would lead to uncertainty. But even
not really, not really. I mean, you eventually run out of issues.
Maybe.
And there's usually no reason that the first defendant through doesn't raise every conceivable issue he can think of.
That's true, Your Honor. But even if the court didn't think Smith controls, I'd point the court to Guillen, which is also cited by McCobb. And in that case, the issue was whether the Florida drug schedule was divisible, and if so, was it divisible into a type of controlled substance that was a controlled substance under the CSA? And in that case, the court said that the Florida drug schedule is divisible and that the district court, or I'm sorry, it was the BIA in that case because it was a removability case, but that the Shepherd document showed that the defendant here had a conviction for possession of cocaine, and cocaine is a controlled substance as defined in the CSA. So not only has this broader issue of the of Florida statute 893.13 being a serious drug offense been litigated, but also the specific issue of whether cocaine and the Florida schedule is the same cocaine as in the Controlled Substance Act has been litigated and decided as well. So I think Guillen also forecloses the argument that is made here. But even if this issue, and of course, the court can't, and this would just be another overlooked argument as to why cocaine doesn't qualify as a controlled substance offense. But even it, and so this court should follow Smith and Gann, even if it's convinced that those cases missed a meritorious argument. But here, this argument is not meritorious, and let me explain why. The burden is on the defendant, as my friend acknowledges, to show that there's a realistic probability that the state statute reaches conduct that is outside the scope of the Armed Career Criminal Act. That burden can be met either by pointing to a case or by pointing to statutory language that itself creates a realistic probability. The statutory language here doesn't create a realistic probability. You have to go beyond the statute to determine if there's an overbreath problem, because on its face, both of these statutes apply to cocaine and they're isomers. The Florida statute applies to cocaine and its stereoisomers. So you have to know what are cocaine stereoisomers before you can know if that reaches forms of cocaine that are legal under federal law. And
right. Ms. Gershow, my understanding is that before the district court, the government did not argue that McCobb failed to show a realistic probability of Florida applying the statutory definition in this way. And furthermore, the government did not argue that meso-cocaine isomers do not exist. Why hasn't the government waived those arguments?
The government didn't make those arguments because the district court found that these arguments were foreclosed by Smith. The district court would not have had any interest in hearing scientific arguments about why the expert report was wrong when the court had already decided that this was foreclosed by Smith. And that decision by the district court was a reasonable decision, and it's been consistent with the position the United States has taken, consistent with the position that this court has taken in Gilbert and in Frazier. So I think it would be really unfair to deprive the United States of the opportunity to make that argument when the district court didn't consider it because of the fact that it believed that the argument was foreclosed by precedent.
Did the government try to make those arguments and the district court shut it down?
No, Your Honor. But the district court found that it was controlled. Had the district court said, I don't think that this is controlled by Smith, then the United States could have asked to call for McCobb to call his expert so that they could have cross-examined the expert and asked the expert, are there things like mesoisomers of cocaine? And the other thing is, of course, this court can affirm for any reason supported by the record. And here, just if you look at this expert report and you look at the plain language of the statute, the plain language of the statute does not create a realistic probability. This isn't like Ramos, where the issue was, is Georgia's theft statute overbroad? Because in Georgia's theft statute, it specifically applies to theft with intent to appropriate, which falls outside the scope of the generic definition of theft. You can look at that statute and say, this statute facially creates a realistic probability. The cases in the Seventh Circuit that McCobb relies on create this statutory mismatch test, and that test is incorrect and inconsistent with Moncrief, which articulates there has to be a realistic probability. The whole point of this is that the categorical approach is supposed to make it so that we know that the defendant is actually convicted of the offense that falls within the scope of the statute. But when you are looking at a statute that doesn't extend to that, there's no realistic probability that it does extend to that conduct, it's not serving the purpose of the categorical approach.
Counsel, is it the government's position that there is no mesoisomer of cocaine, or that the defendant hasn't proven or shown that there is no mesoisomer of cocaine?
It's both. It is the United States' position that there is no mesoisomer of cocaine, and that cocaine cannot have mesoisomers based on the chemical, the shape of the molecule, because it does not have an internal plane. That's not the record below. But our position is that it's the burden.
I'm sorry, I missed that. What did you say about that proposition in the record below?
We didn't. We did not say anything about that in the record below.
Okay, but your position, if there was a remand, is there's no mesoisomer and it can't have a mesoisomer for cocaine.
Correct. And I would also point to the various statutes in Gamboa. You know, they sent it back because they said, well, they put positional isomers of methamphetamine in the statute. That has to have meant something. They wouldn't have just put positional isomers in there if there weren't. And then on remand, it turned out, no, in fact, there are not positional isomers of cocaine. So the fact that these statutes are worded in this way doesn't have any bearing on whether or not these particular isomers exist. But the statutory language has to create the realistic probability, or they have to point to the case. And here, the statutory language does not create the realistic probability because they had to put an expert report in to even try to explain what the text meant. So I would say this would be like if there was a federal statute that said it's illegal to possess firearms on public trains and buses. And there was a state statute that said, a Florida statute that said it's illegal to possess firearms on any forms of any Florida form of public transportation. Well, to know if those statutes, if that created a realistic probability, you have to know what the forms of public transportation are in Florida. And if the only forms of public transportation in Florida are trains and buses, the statutes are not overbroad. So they don't—
But that seems different, right? I mean, you know, the definition of whether Florida transportation includes just trains and buses is up to Florida law, right? But the definition of whether there are in fact stereoisomers is a fact of organic chemistry, right? I mean, That's not something that can be changed by legislation. There either are or are not stereoisomers of cocaine. Correct. Isn't that different?
The point was just to illustrate that when a statute refers to its something, you have to know what that something is. And to your point, with organic chemistry, we can know what and do know what the isomers of cocaine are. And so it's not enough just to say, well, there are in theory other types of isomers for other molecules. You have to show that this statute on its face applies to isomers of cocaine that would be legal under federal law. And that this statute facially doesn't show that. So they had to put in a case where somebody had been convicted of a Florida cocaine offense that would have been legal under federal law, and they have not done so. And so for these reasons and the reasons that
Judge Rosenbaum, may I ask one more question before counsel sits down?
Of course.
So we have a case called United States versus Canty, where we said remand for further proceedings is inappropriate when the issue was before the court and the parties had the opportunity to introduce relevant evidence. Here, the issue of the existence of cocaine meso-isomers was before the district court, and Dr. Bridges' report was before the court. So why wouldn't remand for further proceedings in which the government could introduce evidence that there are no meso-isomers of cocaine be inappropriate?
Because the expert in the district court was never called to the stand and didn't testify, so we didn't get the opportunity to even cross-examine her and test the validity of her report. And so I would say that we should at the very least have the opportunity to do that.
Let me, if I'm taking it a little over, there's a problem with an evidentiary hearing, is there not? I mean, the Florida statute means whatever the Florida statute meant when it was enacted. You can't have a factual hearing about that, I wouldn't think. Although you're talking about the realistic probability or possibility issue. And the problem you can have with that too is the clear error review. Let's say that was a factual evidentiary matter. You remand in this case for an evidentiary hearing. The district court hears a battle of experts. I don't know whether it's settled as a matter of organic chemistry or not. Seems to me like if it was, somebody would have cited us to an organic chemistry book somewhere or to some learned journal that settled it. Y'all haven't done that. But if it's a factual issue and we go back and the judge hears battle of experts or whatnot, the judge says, I make a credibility determination. And based on that, there is no isomer of cocaine. Next defended up, separate case, different judge. Said, judge, there's an isomer of cocaine, meso-isomer. Here's my expert. Judge hears that thing and says, I make a determination that there is. And therefore, I rule in favor of the defendant. And neither one of them is clearly erroneous because both of them are based upon determinations of credibility based on the demeanor of the witness, so forth and so on. I have a hard time wrapping my head around the fact that this is an evidentiary issue as a matter of as opposed to a matter of established scientific certainty one way or the other, or consensus of scientific experts. And if it's that, that's not evidence. That's something that's established, we can cite to sources that establish that. Or we can't.
Well, Your Honor, I did cite to a case, Bacchus, that establishes what the isomers of cocaine are. The cocaine has 8 isomers, and all of those isomers are optical isomers. And my friend says, well, you know, that might not be what the isomers are today, but that doesn't even make any sense because cocaine can only have, any molecule can only have a certain number of theoretical isomers. And if you're talking about, I think what she's talking about is analogs where they come up with a cocaine-like substance, but that would not be cocaine and its isomers. We know what cocaine's isomers are. They are the 8 isomers listed in that case, and all of those isomers are optic isomers. And as and to your point as well, that's why when you have to look at the statutory language and say, is there an obvious over, is it obvious that this statute criminalizes forms of cocaine that would be legal under federal law? It is not obvious. Therefore, the burden on them is to show a case. And if they can't do that, then they haven't met the realistic probability test. Hey, and
you've answered my question, counsel.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We'll hear again from Ms. Howard.
Thank you, Your Honor. Catherine Howard on behalf of Mr. McCobb. I just had a few points that I wanted to address based on my friend on the other side's argument. First, just very briefly on Guillen. The issue in Guillen, as Ms. Gershow correctly stated, was whether 893.13 is divisible by type of substance. That was the issue in Guillen. And to the extent that Guillen states that cocaine is both a controlled substance under Florida and federal law, the courts and the party all assumed that the statutory definitions matched. So to the extent that we can glean anything, any implication that those match, that would have just been an assumption that lurked in the record that would not bind this court in any way. Second, I wanted to address the Baucus case that was mentioned because that case, I do not think this court can rely on to make any sort of scientific determination about cocaine's isomers. The footnote that addresses the isomers of cocaine is not the holding of the case. We don't know exactly even where the court got that information. And although molecules have a limited number of isomers, that does not mean that the state of the science has not developed in the last 40 plus years to identify what those isomers are and what they are. And also, if cocaine only has optical isomers, as was suggested, that means that the federal definition of cocaine, which includes optical and geometric isomers, when elsewhere the federal government controls only optical isomers of other substances, would be, you know, no more than spilled ink. It would also make the definition of cocaine in Illinois, which we know includes optical, geometric, and positional isomers, no more than spilled ink. And so the government would essentially be asking this court to disregard every legislative determination about what forms of cocaine it wants to control based on this footnote that we really can't take any reliance on.
What would you say are your best cases for the proposition that the burden is on the government to show that cocaine cannot take the form of a stereoisomer?
A couple of cases, Your Honor. First, I would point this court to the De La Torre case. In that case, the Indiana controlled methamphetamine and its isomers, and the federal government controlled methamphetamine and its optical isomers. The court performed the textual analysis to determine that even though the statute controlled its isomers, it was nevertheless statutorily overbroad. And so the plain language of the statute rendered the definition broader than the federal definition. And although the government then on appeal, just like the government here, is bringing forward a position that the way in which it is overbroad is impossible, the court said, you know, we don't know any, we can't determine the isomeric nature of methamphetamine ourselves as a court of appeals. And I think that same logic applies here. And what the court did was say, government, you can raise that argument and present proof for that argument in a future case. And then also I would point to the Rodriguez-Gamboa cases that we cited. And in that case, once again—
Well, why does the government have to present evidence of that?
Because it's the government's ultimate burden to prove that Mr. McCobb is subject to the Armed Career Criminal Act. Mr. McCobb had the burden of showing that the statutory language itself is overbroad. He met that burden for the reasons that I discussed earlier.
He didn't meet that burden unless cocaine has a mesoisomer.
He had to show that his burden was to show that the Florida definition is broader than the federal definition, and that because Florida controls stereoisomers, that means more than optical and geometric. And he did that.
Yeah, but it doesn't, but the hidden premise in your argument is that it also includes mesoisomers, which is impossible in a cocaine case. The thing I think that your argument is missing, or maybe I'm missing it from reading your argument, is that could very easily be a mesoisomer of some controlled substance other than cocaine, which is why the statute covers it if there is one. But that doesn't mean that there is an isomer of cocaine. And therefore, it doesn't mean that the statute on its face includes something that the federal statute doesn't. It's just that that's speaking to all the controlled substances.
Your Honor, I think maybe if I'm understanding your question, the Florida government controlled stereoisomers only for cocaine and not for any other substance. In fact, cocaine is the only substance for which it controls stereoisomers. It controls for other substances, optical isomers or geometric isomers. So we know because it specifically is controlling stereoisomers only for cocaine and not other substances, that there is a meaning to that choice and that that means that the statute is overbroad.
All right, thank you, counsel. I think we have your argument.